Hey, this is Aaron Conley. I make a Sabretooth Swordsman, and you're listening to 11 O'Clock Comics.
Sounds a little different there, Dap.
It did.
What's up with the acoustics there in that room?
I mean, I'm in the spare bedroom upstairs, and it's not as cluttered as the office back home.
Paper absorbs a lot of sound.
Yeah, there's no stacks and stacks of books and surrounded by.
Oh, but isn't that a wonderful place to be, though?
Surrounded by books?
Surrounded by books, yes.
Fuck yes.
That's why I want to die. Screw the casket, just fill the vault with paper and then just throw some concrete over it. We're done.
Then there's later on in the episode, then I'll pose a question to you two.
Okay. Oh, boy. Questions are good.
Yes.
And we have a lot of answers for you because this is 11 O'Clock Comics episode 910. And I'm Vince B.
Ooh, you are Vince B. I am David A. Price.
And we have a guest this week. Not so much a guest as just a family member.
Another member of the family, yeah.
Yeah, returning to the fold. He's a genius, period, and a master illustrator, responsible for the masterpiece that is Kankor. It's Matthew Allison.
Hey, everybody.
You are a genius.
Good evening. No. I've ever thought that was when I was on mushrooms. I was in the basement of this like S&M club with my friends. I'm a genius. No, you're not.
Well, that was the universe telling you something you haven't come to learn yet.
Okay.
But you will. And I have information for our listeners because cheapgraphicnovels.com, that's cheapgraphicnovels.com, has Matthew's graphic novel, Kankor. You can get it at a sizable discount, among other things like omnibus editions, trade paperbacks, manga, Omnibu, all that stuff at a fraction of what you're going to pay at the other stores. And you're going to be really smart, and because you're going to fire up your browser and go to cheapgraphicnovels.com, look around, and you're going to say, holy crap, this stuff is cheap. I want this, and I want this. But whoa, big dog, slow down, because you don't want to order too much. Because if you order, you will receive an email confirmation, and you're going to reply to that email confirmation saying, hey, Max, 11 O'Clock Comics sent me. Max is going to say, next order shipping is on me, big fella. So then that's when you order the multitude of paper. It's very simple. Cheap graphic novels. That's obviously not that simple. Cheapgraphicnovels.com. Go there and save.
And Kankor is proof that really great things come in slightly smaller packages because it's not your traditional graphic novel format size. And I really like that.
Well, the hardcover is the Ad House book wasn't. That was a 6x9.
That's the one I have, yeah.
Yeah, and I have to say this about Max and Cheap Graphic Novels, because I ordered an artist edition from him a while back, and there were some issues with the shipping, and he handled it like a pro. Great customer service, so highly recommend Cheap Graphic Novels.
He is a mensch.
True that, yep. Well, I'm going to be the bummer, probably, because I'm drinking just blackberry lemonade sparkling water.
That's not a bummer.
It's the most delicious.
Sparkling, it's blackberry.
Yeah, and I think it's the most delicious drink on the planet. I love this stuff. I buy it by the case.
Nice. That's awesome.
I take a bath in it.
Well, hey now.
Yeah.
That'll offset the Axe body spray. What are you drinking, Matthew?
Dick. I have got a can of CBD-infused sparkling water, lemon-lime flavor from a company called Untitled Art. And it doesn't taste very good because you can kind of taste the hemp oil, but...
Oh, okay.
I need it. I've had a rough couple days, so I need that CBD.
Maybe it'll kick in. Oh, and I have a visitor now. There's somebody in the room with me. Dad wants to see the magic happen. I had a couple of glasses of Malbec with dinner. And since I don't want to wake up in a coma, I am just finishing the night with some water. But yeah, and that's also a shout out to Jason since he's not with us tonight.
So sad.
He's overseas right now, probably.
There you go.
But yeah. So that's the drink roll call tonight. Sorry,
nice.
Christopher Burton.
Nice. Well, Matthew came up with a neat little, I don't want to call it a game, but an exercise for this episode. I'm calling it the Big Two Switcheroo, but he can explain the finer points of it. What are we doing, Matthew?
Well, this came about sometime last year. I was, you know, flipping through long boxes, and I was pulling out the Dave Gibbons Green Lantern issues, which are incredible. I love that run. And as I was looking at his stuff, I was like, man, he would have been a great replacement artist for Steve Rude on Nexus when I think it was after like 54 or something that Steve Rude took off for a little while. And then I started thinking, like, you know, what else has Gibbons done outside of DC work and the work he did in the UK? And I realized he didn't do a whole lot of Marvel work. There's a little bit out there, but not a whole lot. So I was trying to, like, think of, you know, other artists that you associate with a particular publisher who really didn't do a whole lot of work for the other, especially, you know, specifically talking about Big Two stuff. So I know you guys, you get feedback on your episodes where you've got guests and you get, you know, maybe more positive feedback when you got lists. So I'm like, well, you got a guest. Maybe we'll do a list and it'll offset. We'll zero it out.
Nice. So, it's good thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, there was an ease with the Marvel side. Like, I could find a DC book for almost every Marvel artist.
Yeah.
But the inverse is not true. There was a lot of, a good amount of DC artists that I could not find any appropriate Marvel books. And that got me thinking, like, why is that true? Like, okay, not to, you know, cast some shade on these guys, but where do you put Kurt Swan on a Marvel?
Oh!
Like, wait.
I got one.
I have him on my list.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I couldn't find anything for Kurt Swan. Same thing with Wayne Boring.
I almost put him down.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I had, and again, I have some self-imposed rules for this.
Look at you.
Yeah, because
putting on your back
now, because if they did a small amount of work at the other company, I would consider them. But somebody like John Byrne, Byrne did a good amount of work for DC and Marvel. So Byrne stricken. And I was thinking Simonson. Nope, he did a healthy amount of work for DC. So these are the guys at least on my list, that are primarily known as either a Marvel or a DC artist.
That's how I was looking at it too. And I made a realization today. I initially, when I threw this at you, Vince, I had said, classified Carmine Infantino as a primarily DC artist. And I think because of his time as an editor there, that's why I'm just always associating him with DC. But I looked him up on
Star Wars.
He did a long run on Star Wars. But he was all over Marvel in the 70s.
Yeah.
He did a lot of smaller runs, like you're saying, where he'd be on for two or three random issues. So no long runs. So he technically counts. That was an interesting find today. That
for me, that similar in that boat was Jerry Ordway, because I know he helped burn out with Fantastic Four for a minute. So that pretty much kind of just disqualified him. And on the flip side, I'm a huge fan of Greg LaRocque from his run on Marvel Team-Up, but he did come over to DC and worked on The Flash for a while. So
right.
He was also removed from my list.
Yeah, and I think it would be really cool if instead of us just going down our lists to state the artist before saying what books we would put them on and see what both of you would answer.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to start.
Okay.
Ramona Fraidon.
I got one.
Okay.
Now you're classifying her as a DC artist.
Yeah, I think we should start DC first, and then
okay.
Because it'll just mentally it'll just be easier just to block out the DC and then move on to Marvel.
Okay, I got one that I'd like to see her do. Okay.
Okay.
I can see. I like a Ramona Fantastic Four book.
Wow.
She did one issue, which is really, really good, that Joe Sinnott inked. It's so good. It's like the only, I think, full interior she did for Marvel. But I would have loved to have seen a longer run from her on that. She did amazing on it.
Fantastic. Okay.
Now, I don't have – that's a inspired choice, but I didn't put her on Fantastic Four.
Okay.
I'm not going to say Namor because that's the obvious answer.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, that was the other thing I tried to do. Like, if somebody – I wouldn't want to put if I picked an artist, I wouldn't want to put them on the comparable version. Like, I wouldn't put Don Newton on Moon Knight just because it's the closest thing to, like, Batman.
I did that. I started doing that a lot. You just mind automatically goes to that.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Mr. Redondo did Swamp Thing. I'd put him on Man Thing. Like,
yeah. You know, right. Exactly.
Right. Right. My first pick for Ramona was Daredevil.
That's awesome.
Okay.
And I went a little crazy and list multiple books.
For the sake of time,
get out of town.
But I'm not surprised you went above and beyond.
Yeah, she'd also, I think she'd excel on Captain America.
Okay,
because she's got a very clean style that I think would fit the character very well. I think she would be gangbusters on Nova.
Mm.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. And my last pick for Ramona is the Inhumans.
Oh yeah, oh man,
yep.
Right.
Think about her doing Medusa.
Oh, Lockjaw?
Yes.
Medusa especially, yeah.
All the women would be very beautiful. All the men would be super handsome. I think she would do a great... You know, Bongo Comics, who did the SpongeBob book? They brought Ramona in to do a bunch of stories within the SpongeBob comic, and they were great. It's like, why isn't this woman working more? Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting, because similarly, you start thinking of female characters, and I thought for her She-Hulk.
Right.
But then I totally cheated here. I made up an entirely new comic that doesn't exist. I would put her on an Incredible Hulk version of Marvel Team-Up called Ever-Lovin' Hulk. So it would be her doing Hulk every issue, but then bringing in other heroes. So
that's a cool book.
Non-existent, but.
Why did they never do a Hulk team-up? That would have been a no-brainer.
Yeah, especially they had the thing. The time of the TV show.
They had Marvel 2-in-1 with The Thing, so I guess they didn't want to do
two. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we had the magazine.
Which is odd, because with DC, you had DC Comics Presents and Brave and the Bold, but DC's two biggest characters. And with Marvel, you had Marvel team-up with Spider-Man and Marvel 2-in-1 with Thing. It's like, how'd you come up with Thing to be the guy everybody's going to team up with? He's not exactly your biggest character that comes to mind. But I mean, it worked. It worked for 100 issues. So
sure.
Yeah, I think the character of Ben Grimm was so well developed that it was easy to write stories with Ben. Whereas I guess the Hulk would probably just be, who is the Hulk going to encounter this issue?
Like, and it's just an instant fight. He's going to fight, and then they'll make up at the end of the issue, and then he'll just move on to the next character.
Right. That's true.
Pretty one note after a while.
I wonder with the Thing, like at that point, it's not like it is now where like everybody's a wiseacre. Everybody's got something snappy to say to somebody else. But at the time it was really, the Thing and Spider-Man were the people where you could really get into the interactions with the other characters in a very snappy way. So that could have had something to do with it.
That's another topic.
Daredevil team up.
Yeah, it's another topic I would like to explore, like wiseacres, because at Marvel, who else did you like? Maybe Hawkeye, right? Clint was a ball buster.
Yeah.
And a sad sack.
And could he pull in the women?
Yeah.
So that was one of my DC picks, Ramona. Okay. Yeah.
What do you have, Matthew?
I have got. Let me pull it up again. So this one may be a little bit of a stretch because he did work for DC. I was thinking of this more of like, where did this person work more often? And that was Alex Nino.
Oh, he's on my list. I love you.
He's more of a Warren guy, you know, did a lot of stuff for 1984 and stuff. But I consider him a DC artist, and I would have put him on Doctor Strange.
Great minds. Yep. That's one of the books on my Alex Nino list.
Okay. Or anything cosmic. I mean, you know, just the way he would, you know, render galaxies and spaceships and all that stuff is awesome.
Right. Dap, what would you put Alex Nino on?
Oh, man. Oh, with his lines? Thor.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, swinging that hammer, then the rest of, like, you know, the Asgardians, and just any sort of the of anything that Thor would come across. Yeah, I'd like, with the cape flowing, I'd like
that. And all the great buildings in Asgard. And I'm sorry, Vince, I jumped on you because you were supposed to guess first before I.
Oh no, that's okay. That's cool.
But yeah, that's a very good choice.
My Alex Nino list, they're all obvious choices. I think I have them on Man-Thing, Doctor Strange, Warlock, and Fantastic Four.
I almost put Warlock. Oh,
fantastic. Yeah. Warlock is great. That's good.
Yep.
My first artist I'll throw out from DC is a big favorite of mine, Jim Aparo. I know Vince probably doesn't have
much. I don't have anything for Jim Aparo because I don't like him, but that's okay.
Exactly.
I learned two things today. So I struggled with this because I had him on my list and I was trying to place, you know, what a good title would be. And I had that same revelation. Like, I don't think I really like Jim Aparo. I feel like he's a really watered down Joe Kubert. And it's not to say, I mean, I appreciate the craft. I appreciate his skill level, and stylistically, it just doesn't speak to me. And I remember being, you know, really disappointed, you know, with how long he stayed on Batman, because I was just like, I don't really like his art. So sorry. And I honestly could not think of a Marvel title to put him on.
I get it. And this is a case where I think an artist may speak to a fan based on where the reader latched onto them, and it was either Brave and the Bold. Of course, eventually that becomes Batman and the Outsiders. He had his run on Batman and Detective. But I was thinking about him today, and between the two main characters of the title and their supporting cast, and because of the characters and how different they are, I would really, really like to see Jim Aparo on Power Man and Iron Fist. Between the martial arts with Danny, between Colleen and Misty, because I do like Jim's women, especially, well, depending on the characters, but I'm not gonna say I struggled, but I thought about other characters that I could see him kind of just play around with. But as far as a book or a series, then that's really the only one that kind of just popped into my head.
I just thought of one I think might work is Cloak and Dagger. And
absolutely, because yes.
he did Phantom Stranger for a while too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I feel like he could handle that's that great. Pretty well.
Yes,
yeah.
I agree with you.
Interesting. Yeah. And I said I don't like Aparo. I don't dislike him. He just doesn't excite. Yeah, he doesn't excite me.
I really like the Joe Kubert comparison. Obviously, whereas Joe's line could be a little bit more rough or ragged, and based on the subject matter, it's absolutely fitting. I mean, who doesn't love Joe's work? Jim is obviously a little bit more, I'm not going to say polished, but his a little bit of a cleaner line, especially when he's inked by Dan DiCarlo, by Mike DiCarlo. But even when he's not inked by anybody, I can definitely, especially the way the elongated versions of the characters and their faces, expressions, I could definitely see some Kubertism there in Jim's work.
Yeah.
All right, I got a left field one.
Mm-hmm.
Shelley Moldoff.
Ooh.
Wow. This is more a guess of where I think you would be going with that, but Howard the Duck?
Nope.
No?
Okay. Oh, man. I don't know why I can't shake Iron Man for some reason.
Interesting.
That's weird. Yeah, okay. No, who do you got?
Well, I have a fairly long list, but they're basically all the same corner of the Marvel Universe. I have Shelley on X-Men, Ecstatics, New Mutants, and I threw the Inhumans in there too, because Shelley did very idiosyncratic women. Like, you could tell a Shelley Moldoff woman, you know, when you see one. I just think he has got a quirky, off-kilter style that maybe the best book in that list is, like, Ecstatics, because he didn't play primarily by the big two rules in terms of stylistic choices. It's very odd style for, I think, one of the major publishers. But
you gotta assume that Allred is a fan.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. That's why I kind of stuck the Ecstatics in there, because you know, they're speaking the same language, albeit decades apart. But yeah. All right.
What you got, Matthew?
I've got Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Ooh, so do I. What you got?
I got him.
All right. So, for you and Jose, I'm gonna say the X-Men.
Okay, Vince.
Well,
because I don't want to say who I would love to see him on, because that's going to be my list. So
right. Okay. One of the revelations that popped up during this exercise is that there's strata of DC artists. There's the workmanlike guys that got it done. Then there's the Swiss Army knives that could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's a wrong answer for Garcia Lopez, because he's so versatile that he could basically be put on any book and do a great job. I have for Jose Luis, I have Avengers, Captain America, Fantastic Four, X-Men. Like, I know it's just throwing every title at the guy. You're not really picking a best case scenario. So if I had to fine tune it, I would say Avengers.
Okay.
Because Garcia Lopez defined the look for a long period of all of the DC characters with that style guide. And I think he would do the same thing at Marvel. I think he was just he's a master.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look at a book like, Cinder and Ash, and he could have done Punisher. You know, it's like he's great with just standard human beings driving down the street, as he is with, you know, people fighting on some other planet. So I just chose, I mean, this is probably, again, a cheat, this is actual comic, but put him on Marvel Team Up, just again to see him draw as many characters as possible.
Yeah,
that's a very good answer. Yeah,
it's similar to one of my Marvel artists on a DC book, but just for move things along, my pick was Avengers, just because I want to see him draw as many characters as possible.
Right, and he would kill it. He would totally destroy 100%. It. Yeah. The one thing that I could not find an artist for is a DC artist to put on Incredible Hulk, other than one, and that's Bernie Wrightson.
See, I would go Nestor Redondo, but Wrightson, yeah. Well, I mean, because you got that Marvel graphic novel that's so amazing. The what is it called? Big Changes with Hulk and the Thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful, but it's like a little. It's almost a tease. And he did a couple of Incredible Hulk covers over the years. Like the most notable one is the Hulk fighting the Man-Thing. Like, that cover is just amazing. But who would you put Wrightson on?
Oh, man. I have him down here. Where did I put him?
Ghost Rider. Yeah. The Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider.
Yeah, he's on my list. Yep.
Shoot, what did I... I'll have to think on that one because I thought I had written something down for him for that, and now I can't remember what I chose. And I thought I had it on my list. So.
I would go into the darker corners of the Marvel, yeah, obviously.
You have to. Right. You almost have to. Yeah, it. I mean, again, putting him on Man-Thing seems like an obvious choice, but he does a great job doing it. In, like, you know, you put him on those 70s horror titles, you put him... You could... Obviously, Tomb of Dracula.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think My Soul is not complete because I've never seen an extended run on Doctor Strange by Bernie Wrightson. Mm-hmm. I think he just would have blew the doors off that book.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But, I mean, Cloak and Dagger, Werewolf by Night, Frankenstein Monster, they're always there. It's almost redundant to say that The Living Mummy, like, Wrightson would have chewed up the pages with those titles.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What next?
What's Matthew got?
Well, we did my next one already. We did Ramona Fraiden.
Okay.
And so then I had Kurt Swan.
I have a Kurt Swan as well, so do I. I'm going to say, again, because I don't want to get mine away. I'll throw it out. West Coast Avengers.
Wow. The chunkiest West Coast Avengers ever. Right.
How could it be? It's not going to be any worse than Al Milgram's version.
Oh, talk about. Oh, God. I remember buying that first issue and I was like, oh, I'm Al Milgram.
Because what pissed me off is Bob Hall did an amazing job on those four issues for the miniseries. And then we get Al Milgram in that shitty fucking Wonder Man outfit. Yep. I'm just like, I can't.
It's like, hey, Hawkeye swallowed a barrel. Like, how did that happen? I don't have a Kurt Swan. I guess if I had to pick, Team America. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
Well, you're close. I chose Captain America. That seemed like the most.
Damn popular. You! That's who exactly. Great minds, brother, because that's who I have here.
Yeah. Yeah, it just, I mean, he's, you know, Kurt Swan, you picture the guy, it's just all American. So that's, you know, the route that you would take. So, yeah.
Like I said, I tried not to kind of do the one company's analog from the other, but that just, I thought of Kurt Swan and it just fit. It just absolutely made sense.
Yep.
I do have a Joe Kubert one. Who do you think, Vince?
Wow. Well, I have a very long list for Joe Kubert.
I know you do, and I'm surprised.
Again,
if mine is on your list.
The guy could do anything.
Yep.
Obvious choices: G.I. Joe, The Nom. Mm-hmm. I have him on Red Wolf, Kid Colt. The one of my favorite periods of Daredevil was when it was Daredevil Black Widow. I would put him on Daredevil then. Captain America, I have Skull the Slayer down for some reason.
<'Cause> That's awesome.
I think Joe would just do a great job on that. Like Tor, only, you know, with a beefcake modern guy and dinosaurs. Like it's just, Joe would be great on Cloak and Dagger. I think he would do a wonderful job on any of the Mutants books. Like it's hard not to put Joe Kubert on anything. Just because he was so multifaceted and just could do everything great.
Yeah, that's true. I, you know, there's things that immediately jump to mind, you know, Kazar.
Yeah.
You know, but I, for some reason, similar to, you know, the one you had on the list was Daredevil. I don't know why that was the first, in terms of superhero books, that was the first thing that popped in my mind was I would personally like to see him draw on Daredevil.
Yeah, because I think that the DC analog, although the characters aren't similar, but the environment was Ragman.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I think just taking Ragman out and putting Daredevil in, the way he visualized that downbeat cityscape, I think would work really well with Daredevil.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I already had Daredevil for a DC artist that we haven't mentioned yet, so I didn't want to repeat. So I wanted to see Joe do Thor.
And he'd kill it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there's no wrong answer for Joe Kubert.
Yeah, or Hercules.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
I think Joe would even do a fabulous job on FF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, definitely not the Kirby sensibility, but there've been some great runs that did not springboard.
Well, that's the thing. That was the thing that I really liked about this question was the idea of why we make these associations in our mind. Is it just because of familiarity? We're just so used to seeing somebody work on a certain type of book, or are certain artists more suited for certain subject matters and certain characters? And they either naturally gravitate towards it, or editors look at their work and like, okay, you're on this book, you're on that book. And like you said, Vince, there's a lot of, you know, the people like Garcia Lopez and Kubert who multifaceted and can go anywhere. But you know, certain things just work really, really well with that characters or that artist, you know?
Yep. And I don't think Marvel and Stan knew exactly what they had with Jack Kirby. I mean, I think they kind of sort of figured it out that the guy was gold, but when Kirby went to DC, that pretty much absolved him from being on our list here. But I'm trying to think, there's not a DC book that Kirby wouldn't excel at, and ooh, and that to me is the thumbprint of like a really boss level god tier artist like Kubert and Garcia Lopez. Like Kirby, you can put him on anything and he would have just destroyed it. And there wasn't, before Jack went over to DC in what was it, 1970, DC did not have an artist on the level of Jack, and I don't think they ever have. It's just that the guy obviously walks on water with me, but just to look back and think of all the books that Kirby touched, and you look at the product, and it's just like it's like we haven't artistically caught up to Jack, and we're talking like 63 on, like what?
Yeah. Well, and just the fact that when he did get to DC, he's like, I'm going to do multiple titles and they're all going to tie in together, and I'm going to write and draw them. It's that, you know, you look at like the period when Frank Miller was doing Dark Knight Returns and Elektra Lives Again and Elektra Assassin and Daredevil Love and War. Like he was working on multiple projects, but other people were drawing some of those, whereas Kirby was like, no, I'm going to do all of it.
Yep.
It's like unbelievable to me. Just unbelievable.
And I know that we like to credit Byrne for revitalizing Superman, but DC got a lot of years off redoing Kirby's Jimmy Olsen. Like that, effectively, the Triangle era, it's almost entirely beholden.
X.
Yeah, it's
Newsboy Legion.
Entirely beholden to Jack Kirby's run on Jimmy Olsen and the Fourth World stuff. And so it's unparalleled creative genius. I mean, we already know that, right? So
sure.
It for a long time it bothered me that DC felt they had to redo Jack's Superman.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yet they have absolutely no problem when Kenner wants to do Superpowers action figures based on that miniseries. And that's Jack's fucking version of Superman.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I remember I don't know the year, but DC released a series of card games. There was a Tarzan, there was a Superman, and they were basically puzzles on playing cards, and you had to get maybe 3, 6, 9, 12 cards and arrange them in, you know, to complete the image, like Marvel value stamps only, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Yeah. And the Kirby Superman, they did not redo the faces.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was, back in the day, I was like, wow, Kirby Superman, because I was younger when he was working on the DC books, and all I knew was his Marvel stuff. And I was like, holy crap. Who was the, maybe it was a Lone Ranger? Lone Ranger, Tarzan, and Superman.
Okay.
Yeah, they were cool. Obviously, I don't have them anymore. But really fun stuff. All right, is it my turn?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, because I think I have one more because we've already discussed everybody else. So, yeah.
Okay. Mike Sikowski.
Oh.
Hmm.
Long run on Justice League of America.
Yeah, so of course, Avengers, but I would also... you know what? It may look weird, but I'd like to see him do Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah, that's what I'm going
with. Wow, that's cool. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll put him on a different team book, then I'll put him on Champions. So you can get like Ghost Rider in there and
yeah, get your Hercules on. Yeah.
I have Sikowski on two books. Alpha Flight.
Oh.
Right?
Love it.
And the Daredevil Black Widow era. I think Mike would do a superb job on that. I mean, I only have him on one group, one team book. Yeah. But I don't normally gravitate towards team books. But Champions is a very good answer, and I'm still out on Amazing Spider-Man. I don't know. I think
hey,
about
man,
that.
Listen, I know, you're a Ross Andrew fan. I mean, if I see Ross Andrew on Spider-Man, then I could see Sikowski.
That's a good topic. When you say Ross Andrew, I think Ross is and Mike Esposito. If you wanted to brainstorm a team that captured an entire era of the flagship character at both Marvel and DC, mm-hmm. I think Ross Andrew and Esposito, they did as well on the Superman books and his supporting cast as they did on Amazing Spider-Man. I think it's weird. I don't think there's anybody that you can say, yeah, you know, they did a wonderful job on Fantastic Four and, like, what else? Andrew and Esposito, they destroyed Amazing. I think it's the best run of Amazing ever. And then they did the same thing for Superman. Like, Superman supporting cast under these guys were amazing.
The for our patrons on the Slack, The daily page rate for a while now has been Andrew and Esposito on Wonder Woman. There has been some Spider-Man sprinkled in there. I'm almost done with their Wonder Woman run, and then it's going to move on to another DC run. But there is still some more, and I also have Andrew not with Esposito or with other anchors as well. But They worked for a long time together, and they've done some amazing work. And their styles, and it's not even just like, oh, this obviously looks like Ross Andrew inked by Mike Esposito, because some of this Wonder Woman stuff, they went back and did some of her Golden Age stories, so they even illustrated the book to look like it was done in the 40s, as opposed to 20 years later when the issue was actually published. So they really are. I didn't give them as much credit as they deserved while I was growing up, but years later, as I got older, wiser, mature, it's obvious that they not only knew their shit, they did phenomenal work together.
Yeah. When I was young and dumb, I was like, oh, I'm glad that Romita guy's off Spider-Man now. What do you know, right? When you're a kid, but I think it all factors into your personal golden age, right? Yeah. I got into Amazing hardcore right when Ross Andrew and Esposito came on the book. And so that's my golden age for Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, can I tell a real quick champion story that's also about being a dumb kid?
Sure.
So, you know, I grew up in Colorado, so most comic book stores were owned by Chuck Rosansky. And there was a Mile High Comics in the local mall, and the Mile High Comics 2 collection had just come out, where Chuck found this immaculate collection of Marvel and DC books that were in perfect condition, and he put them in these really thick Mylar sleeves, and he printed these certificates of authenticity saying they were handpicked to be in the Mile High collection. But of course, for me, it was just like I coveted these things, and I would look at them in the display case every time I went to the store. So Christmas time was coming up, and I learned to be very specific with my parents after this. I just said, I want one of those Mile High collection books. But I didn't tell them which one I wanted. I really wanted like a Byrne X-Men or a Miller Daredevil. And so Christmas morning, opening up presents, I see something sort of comic book shaped, open it up, and it was like issue 7 of Champions. It's like, I was so disappointed, and I'm sure I didn't hide it at all, but it was just like, oh, I thought I was going to get the X-Men, but ended up really enjoying the issue. I didn't even know about the Champions at that point, but you know, my parents were very cool about getting me stuff that I wanted. I just needed to be very specific in that
right.
case. Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit more information, you probably would have got
exactly.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, is my fifth one the last one?
Now I have one more.
Go ahead,
Alex Toth.
Oh.
Oh wow. Oh. Shit.
Because he did something good.
Doctor Strange. Yeah, that's my answer. Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Wow, that's a good one. For some reason, with most of these, you know, my mind goes to Daredevil, but exactly. Yeah, I could see him on something like Nova. I think, you know, I mean, you think about like Space Ghost and stuff. I think he'd be really good on a cosmic or space set book.
My number one for Alex was Daredevil.
Mm.
Then I have Sergeant Fury in the Howling Commandos. I think he would do a great job on that. And for some reason, I see Toth doing Ghost Rider.
Hmm.
The Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider, which, yeah. You know, doesn't add up, but he had such a strong black and white sensibility where he I think he was a master of shadows. And design, and yeah. His line is just phenomenal. I would love to. I think it's more like a wish than it would be. Like, who knows? It could go either way, right? But and I would like him to letter it as well. Cool. Since we're dreaming, right?
Right.
We might as well. I think Toth's handwriting was amazing.
I think the reason maybe we're gravitating towards Daredevil is in my mind. Because of what Miller did on that book, you know, with Jansen, it was so revolutionary and so different than anything else. To me, it's always the go-to as this, you know, creative depot where you can just like plug in right. new, fresh ideas. So, taking an artist who's really expressive like that, really unique, it makes sense to put him on that title.
Let's be honest, right? There are a lot of Marvel books that are beloved to us, Amazing Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, but has there, in terms of aesthetics, has there ever been a work at Marvel that eclipsed Born Again? For me, it's no. Like, Born Again is the absolute perfect little condensed nugget of everything that is Daredevil, but it's done. And Matthew, you and I were talking about this before in terms of respectability. Born Again doesn't feel like a superhero book. It feels like you're reading combination noir, existential crisis of faith. It's just a little bit of nunsploitation. It's this weird, crystalline, beautiful thing within the Marvel oeuvre that just doesn't. I think it's just better than everything else they've ever done. And it's
there's no denying the sheer magic that Mazzucchelli was capable of.
Sure, yeah.
In whatever he did, you know, beyond the superhero stuff that he did at Marvel, and Batman Year One, his mind just works like no other artist. And for Frank Miller to then team up with him and work on that, it that's impossible to recreate.
Right.
I think the people that come closest to that, who I would assume would be very much inspired is like Brubaker and Phillips. Like that's, I would imagine if you said, okay, what is your touchstone for everything that you do? They would probably point to Born Again.
Yep.
And the only thing that might come close to being something that could be considered a self-contained story that just makes you so happy or so thrilled with what this medium can offer might be the Demon Bear Saga, but it's completely different and it's visually stunning, but it doesn't, for my money, It's not on the same level. The only
I think Born Again is far more relatable.
Absolutely, and the only thing that it doesn't detract from the story. It doesn't make it any less because it's necessary for the closing moments of the book. The only thing that really keeps it from being an absolute stunner of a self-contained story is the Avengers coming in to not save the day, but Captain America has to talk down Nuke. Thor brings down the storms to get rid of the flames. Iron Man is there for crowd control. So aside from those few panels, and when Captain America is called in because he has to deal with Nuke, aside from that, you wouldn't even know that really it had anything else to do with the Marvel Universe. It's just it's Daredevil, it's Matt Murdock versus Wilson Fisk. That's the entirety of the seven issues. But here's a reminder that it is in the Marvel Universe, and that doesn't take away from it, but it does. It is the only thing that really just I'm not gonna say it even takes down a notch. It's just it is hands down a top five story for me, period, of all of comics and of all the decades. But the more I start to just think about things as I've thought about it over the years, there are every once in a while I have a small moment where I'm just like, man, I kind of wish no other characters were in this book. They are. That's fine. I wonder
if that was editorially mandated. Like, if you're going to have this high level of a threat, you can't have that happening.
Who else would you have take down Nuke? Who else is going to talk this person, this character off the ledge? Daredevil's not. Has to be. Same thing with Captain America when Punisher needs to be put in his place. It's like, who else do you bring in except Captain America?
But conceptually, though, that's Frank saying this is America sweeping under the rug the disenfranchised, war-torn PTSD, scarred soldiers. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. I mean, the fact that he used Captain America was absolutely perfect.
Yep.
Because it's just, this is what we do when you sacrifice everything for your country and then your country forgets about you. Right. So yep. Captain America comes in and cleans up. It was a masterstroke on Frank's part to do that, whether it was editorially mandated or not. I mean, he made it work, you know? All right, we got to speed it up a little bit because we're nearing the end. So let's do the
my last DC on a Marvel book is Dave Gibbons, and just to speed things up, it's the book we just got done talking about. I'd love to see a Dave Givens Daredevil.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I got Brian Boland. I think instead of working on Camelot 3000, he should have gone over and did Deathlock.
Should have been working on cars. Be a mechanic.
Deathlock would be great.
Deathlock would have been fucking awesome. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
Oh, poor Mike W. Barr. He had such high hopes for that.
He had to be running other things. This just wasn't it.
Yeah, this wasn't anybody's.
No, it wasn't.
All right, so let's flip the script.
Okay.
Yeah. Marvel artists going to DC. So I went with one of my favorite Marvel artists. And that's not all he did. He had an extensive career, but he was one of the – he touched a lot of books for Marvel, and that is John Severin.
Mm, ooh.
Okay.
Who would we put Severin or what? Why do I keep saying who? There's a couple no-brainers.
Jonah Hex.
Yeah. I was thinking Westerns initially. Yeah, I mean, I think that if you were to put him on something like Superman and let him, you know, because he was always given more realistic stuff to do, but I, you know, who knows what he would have done with a more
You'd have to give him a book where, like, because depending on when he would start drawing Superman, is it going to look like Christopher Reeve or George Reeves?
How about Green Arrow?
That would work. Yeah,
that would work.
Yeah,
yeah.
I have Severin on Sergeant Rock, on Soldier, of course, Tomahawk, the Shadow. I think Severin would have kicked the doors off the Shadow. The Question.
Yeah, very good.
Black Hawk, All-Star Squadron. Like, I think, again, Severin didn't display, maybe this isn't fair, but Severin's versatility wasn't as on display at Marvel than it was in Cracked. Like, in the pages of Cracked magazine, Severin could do anything. He could do superheroes, monsters, war stories, like everything. And then look at the EC books, where Severin is primarily a war artist. So, yeah, I think Severin's one of those guys that just could do a lot, but I don't think he got the opportunity to really let that stuff show.
Yeah, he could have, you know, been very good on a John Constantine book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So who's next?
I'll go next. I got Mike Ploog.
Oh, my goodness. Yikes.
I'm sure Swamp Thing's just a given.
Yeah,
so,
that's pretty much.
We got to think outside the box there.
Punch myself in the face. I didn't even think of Ploog, which is, that's wow, on me.
Blasphemous.
Yeah.
Hawkman.
Oh, okay.
Sharp. Yeah. Wow. Ploog. Well, I could be, you know, an idiot and say Night Force because he'd do a good job on that.
Oh, yeah.
I've had multiple issues of Night Force, never read it. Flip through it a lot of times, but
yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's more a Gene showcase than it is.
Well, I put him on the Creeper.
Yes.
Oh,
perfect. Awesome. Demon. He'd be great on Demon.
Demon. For sure.
Yep.
Bob Layton.
Okay.
I have nothing for Layton.
Yeah. Because we discussed, it's not as easy to find too many Marvel artists that made their way over to DC. But, of course, Bob worked at Valiant for a while. But because of the tech, because of the characters, because of some of the aliens we'd see from time to time, the new Teen Titans. I'm thinking Cyborg's look, Starfire, her sister, fighting out in space. I think he'd he'd be a good fit for that book.
I think he'd do a good job on Green Lantern too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because he'd get to do all the different constructs from the ring and
yep.
you know, make all that kind of tech doing that. Yeah, I could see that.
What's next?
Who do you have, Vince?
Sal Buscema.
Oh, I got him on my list. Okay. Oh, man. the Superboy.
Wow.
The Connor Kent.
Yeah, I never would have thought that. But, I mean, Sal would be great at it, right?
Yeah.
I would, I'd say Hawk and Dove.
Interesting.
I like it.
I think the DC book that Buscema was born to draw but never did, Doom Patrol.
Ooh, yeah.
That's hot.
Because Sal was always... they put him on except for Spider-Man, the Peter Parker run. Sal was always on odd books like The Hulk and Rom. And I mean, he did a great job on whatever he touched.
He was their utility man.
Yeah, he just had and you know, spittle in the mouth. So I think Sal would be great on Dr. Fate.
Yeah,
Ragman, just the weirder DC books. I think he'd be really great. I mean, he would. I don't know about Superman or Batman,
right?
But
I'll jump ahead of Matthew here. My Sal Buscema pick was Batman and the Outsiders.
Yeah, because of the quirk. Metamorpho would be great for Sal
on his own, sure. But but Metamorpho and then. The different whatever Halo does, but Batman would be there, but I mean the rest of the characters, I think Sal would have fun with.
Well, Sal did a bunch of Defenders too, right? So I mean, he showed ability with team books, so why not?
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right,
so now it's your turn, Matthew.
All right, so I've got John Romita Sr.
Excellent.
Oh.
I already know one of Vince's answers on that.
Yes, you do.
And it's the perfect one. It's like, I don't know why I didn't think of that immediately, but yeah. So,
Dap, you want to know what I picked?
Yes.
Wonder Woman.
Damn.
Can you imagine a John Romita Sr. Wonder Woman? Like, I think it would be one of those runs that's up there with like the best of them. But it's so easy to say that John Romita Sr. from his interior work to his covers, like he was next to Kirby. I think Romita Sr. was the go-to guy at Marvel for a lot of years. I also have him on Legion and Superman.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, Superman's definitely a good one. Yeah.
Can you? But if Romita Sr. did Legion, all of the women would be like knockout gorgeous.
It's true.
And even the ones that shouldn't have been still would have been, right? It's just like all his men would be Peter Parker handsome. It'd be wonderful. Wonderful.
Wow.
Who do you have Romita Sr. on, Dap?
I would like to see Green Lantern.
Yeah. Yeah, that was almost my pick. I went with Mr. Miracle just to see him draw Big Barda.
That's great.
It's crazy.
Also, like, he's such a great cartoonist. I think that's one of the things he's underrated for is just the almost...
Plastic Man.
Yeah, he'd be great on Plastic Man because he's got almost a reined-in Jack Davis. Like, if somebody told Jack Davis, like, don't be so angular, don't be so loose... Romita's got some of that. So I feel like if you gave him a title where the characters can be even wilder than Spider-Man could, like he could, you know, do some really interesting stuff with that.
Yeah, agree.
And Big Barda.
Yeah. It's a good thing that he never drew Big Barda because puberty would have came a lot sooner.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
I think there's room for more. How about John Buscema?
Yep, I got him on my list, and I will. Oh, because John, I had to be careful because of course he did do the Treasury edition. He did that crossover. So he has done a piece of work. But I wouldn't mind. This isn't my pick, but I'd love to see John on Wonder Woman.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
although when I first came up with his name, I was, but again, this is like, this might be too close. Warlord. I mean, at least this way people would actually sure. buy and read Warlord. But. Damn
you. Well, I could see if you did a Wonder Woman that was more based in the Amazonian world.
Yes.
Yeah. More sword and sandal type stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say Commandy. Just because I know Ooh. He's not big on drawing superheroes, or right. wasn't. So yeah. I think that would give him a nice area to play in where it was, you know, not stuff he didn't really enjoy doing, but with still a fantasy element.
It would be blasphemous, though.
Just who took over after Kirby?
Nobody. There was like a brief. There's no issues after Kirby.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, for Big John, Dap took my first pick, which would be Warlord.
Yeah, it's still on the nose.
But yeah. I also have.
You really did pick that. Okay,
I did. Yeah, I also have him on Blackhawk.
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be great.
Because I didn't want to keep it within the realm of sword and sorcery, because that's again, that's the obvious choice. But lest we forget, Buscema had a killer run on Avengers. Yep. Which he didn't enjoy doing, but it's still a great piece of work.
And his Wolverine stuff is awesome, and that's pretty grounded. I mean, it's not. I mean, Wolverine's barely in his costume in any of those. There's not a lot of
X-Men around,
real, you know, crazy villains or anything. But something just popped in my head that would work for him. Oh, the Shadow.
Yep.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, his Wolverine run is perfect. I adore that run. I really do. And I think rereading it. For what was it? The book of the month? We read the Wolverine stuff. And it reignited my
whole French stuff.
Yeah, reignited my love of Wolverine.
I ended up buying the black and white reprints of that when you guys did that episode.
Oh, it's
I
so
flipped through that all the time. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks so good in black and white too.
Yep.
Do we have any others?
Well, my actual pick. For John Buscema on my list, because I want to see him draw as many characters as possible, is The Brave and the Bold.
Mm. Or DC Comics Presents. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he already did Superman. So I was trying to think of something that, you know, where he wouldn't have had the opportunity to
draw.
I mean, not that Superman couldn't show up in Brave and the Bold, but at least have him, Batman as the star and then whoever else shows up. But yeah. Yeah, his Superman is great. I love his Superman.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. Anything else before we wrap up the big two? What do we call it? Big two switcheroo.
Big two switcheroo. I have Jim Valentino, and I have Ron Lim.
Wow.
Hmm.
Oof. Yikes. Valentino.
Ambush bug.
I like it.
Yeah, that's a. Yeah,
but that's so synonymous with Giffen, like it's hard to stick somebody else in there.
Yeah, has anybody even ever tried to do an ambush bug that wasn't Giffen? Flooring left me for that minute.
Valentino on Deathstroke.
That's weird. That's weird in a good way. I like that.
I wouldn't want to peg him on a book. That you like the DC equivalent of Guardians of the Galaxy, which would be Green Lantern maybe or something like that. But yeah, I think he'd do a really odd job on Deathstroke. I think that's so maybe Teen Titans too.
Well, I have him on Infinity Inc.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There's
did you. Because that didn't McFarlane work on that?
Yes.
So were you making like an Image connection?
No. I definitely wasn't. No.
Okay.
And Ron Lim. Ron Lim is just. It was. I was looking for something for him to do. And I was like, yeah. He's like, hey, what you guys got any work for me? So I'm just like, hey, you know what? I'm like, I could see. I didn't want anything spacefaring. I didn't want anything too cosmic, so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to bring them down to street level, and I gave him Green Arrow. Just see him have fun with the quivers and the arrows, and I just, yeah, why not? Why not? But the Mike Grell hooded version, the Sherwood Forest version, not the Neil Adams.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking with the John Severin thing, that version, yeah.
I got to go in for Ron Lim.
Yeah?
Captain Atom.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really great answer.
Yeah, because I'm thinking of the Pat Broderick when it came back, and I could see Lim slipping in there real easy.
Yep.
I like that.
All right, cool. Big two switcheroo.
I got two more real quick. I got to say, so I was just going to put Mike Zeck on DC Comics Presents.
Love it.
And then Barry Windsor Smith. My first thought was OMAC, partly because I love the Machine Man series so much. So I thought the Trimpy Windsor Smith combo going over and doing OMAC. But then I thought it would be great to have him do a Vertigo version of Metamorpho.
Oh,
wow. Well, here's some conceptual continuity for you. Since Barry Windsor Smith began his career as a Jack Kirby clone,
mm-hmm.
I would put him on the Fourth World books.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah. Well, I think so the other thing with OMAC, I always associate him with Storm. I know you don't want to hear that, but
that's okay. She exists.
Because, you know, the what is that? Love Death? Is that what those?
Life Death.
Yeah. That's right. So the Mohawk with OMAC just stuck in my brain.
Nice.
It's more the Machine Man thing.
I think looking at his work, like Ad Astra in Africa, he'd do a great job on, and the Life Death. He would do a wonderful job on Wonder Woman.
Sure.
And again, it's Barry Windsor Smith. So we'd get maybe two issues a year, but they would be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent. Big two switcheroo. If you enjoy stuff like this, let us know. We'll do more of it. It's a whole lot of fun, and it's just relaxed comic book conversation, and that's what we love here. Please take a look at our sponsor, cheapgraphicnovels.com. We'll get you the stuff you want at the price you want to pay. And don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. We have a whole mess of stuff going on over there. Downloads, as Dap said, page a day, cover a day. We have EOC Loves, where we spotlight the work of an artist every month and just litter the Slack with covers and interior images. It's just a whole lot of fun. And you can talk about many things on the Slack, not just comics. So check it out. patreon.com/11oclockcomics. In your travels, it's a crazy time. Dogs sleeping with cats. Because Eric Larson released another issue of Savage Dragon. This is three issues of Savage Dragon in 3 months.
Crazy.
I don't know what to think anymore, but it's a great feeling. I'm not going to say too much about it. This is Savage Dragon 269. There's a lot of vagina in it. Mickey Mouse is a perv and a rapist. I don't know. Okay. Just go read it. It's Eric Larson unhinged. In the best way possible. You really need to support this book because, as comics go, it's one of the best. Savage Dragon 269.
Nice. Your travels, since Jason isn't here, and I'm not going to spoil it anyway, it's just going to be real quick because it picks up immediately after the third issue. A lot of action in here. It's really fast-paced. The fourth issue of Duke from Image. And Skybound by Joshua Williamson, Tom Riley, Jordan Belair, and Bruce Wooten. The cover doesn't lie. I checked, and Duke, because he was shot in the leg in the previous issue, he's showing the wound on the cover. The cover is very reminiscent, is pretty much indicative of what you'll find inside the issue. There's just there's maybe one or two oh shit moments within. Looks absolutely phenomenal. I gotta see where this goes with the fifth issue. Not that I'm really worried, but it's all about the journey with this. So, yeah, definitely. If you haven't, I'm sure you might as well at this point wait for the inevitable trade. But if you are reading them as they come out, then absolutely join me in saying, in your travels, Duke, number four.
Well, I got a crowdfunder campaign I'd like people to look at in their travels from my good buddy, Charles Forsman. He's got a new book coming out called Here Comes Chesley. And, you know, Charles did The End of the Fucking World. He did Revenger. And this is, I haven't read it yet, but I know it's going to be good. Looks kind of like a Sugar and Spike type of book, or maybe Herbie. But the campaign's underway, and it's already funded. So to get in and get a copy of it, it's just at crowdfunder.com. And if you search Charles Forsman or Chesley, that's Chesley.
I love the ellipsis. I love it.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, this looks really good. How did I not know about this?
And his last name is Newsneck, and I just realized he has a noose around his neck. So I bet there's a little bit of bleak element to this. So, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm on it. All right, everybody. Thank you, Matthew, for being here with us.
Thank you.
What do you say you drop by next episode, too?
Yeah, so next week, 7 days from now. All right.
No. Just 4 or 5.
4 or 5.
Okay, yeah, whatever.
Yes. I put it on my calendar, and then I will talk to you guys in 4 to 5 days.
Excellent. See you then.
All righty. Okay. All right, everybody. Hey, do yourself a favor. Buy some comics. Talk about them. Read them. Love them. And then come to our Slack and talk about them more, or our socials. We got the Facebook thing going on. We're everywhere because we love you so much. Say goodnight. Damn it. I don't have anything. Oh, well. Woe is me. David.
Good night.
I'll make sure I have one for next week.
David, you mean 4 or 5 days?
Yes.
Okay.
Tell them you love them.
Love them.
Oh, yeah.
That's it for that one.